does take both of us to do this. We are men of extremely strong egos and naturally competitive, so we fight regularly about who's going to get top billing and who's going to do what. General agreement is I get to do all the fun stuff. Bill has to do all the hard stuff, the technology, but he gets to keep all the money we make. So it works. Are you ready, Maestro?
Yep.
All right. Scottsdale Squirrel Bar. Actually, I shortened that title. I don't know what I was drinking last year when I gave James that original title, but it's accurate, but it's shortened now from Scottsdale Squirrel Barker, from the blue guitar to country rock. And Bill addressed a little bit about why we chose this topic, and I actually chose it and forced it on you because it's something that I've been interested in for a lot of years. Already had a lot of information. I've had opportunities to talk to Chris Hillman about the Scottsdale Squirrel Barkers, a little bit Bernie Ledden, and certainly Kenny Wirtz. I visited him in San Diego in his home, and it was just the album, since I first discovered it 20 years ago or something, it always intrigued me. So I thought it'd be something great that we could share. In the early 60s, folk music revival was having a strong impact on bluegrass music across the country. 1959, the Stanley Brothers played the Newport Folk Festival. 1960, both the Stanleys and the Osmond Brothers performed at Antioch College in Ohio. Red, you were probably there for some of these things. In 1962, the Stanley Brothers played at Oberlin College, and that same year, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs recorded a project entitled Folk Songs of Our Land, which included two songs written by Woody Guthrie. These were not isolated incidents, as many of the established bands, as well as some regional groups, were taking advantage of the interest in their music among a new generation of urban youth. Many would argue that the music was diminished by these efforts to appeal to the folk music fans, particularly the changes in repertoire. There was no question that bluegrass popularity was increasing. Bluegrass was attracting new disciples to new venues in new areas of the country. That just sort of sets the mood for where things were in 1962. One of the places where bluegrass was getting stronger foothold was San Diego, California, where a group of young men from different backgrounds and of different ages were gathering to make music. Although the group was an amalgam of musical genres from folk to flamenco, one subgroup was drawn to traditional bluegrass, and the individuals in this group were destined to make their mark on the soon-to-be-born genre of country rock. That group formed in 1962 was the Scottsdale Squirrel Barkers. And this is just a spasm of a three-finger breakdown. Bernie Ledden, contemporary of the Squirrel Barkers, and later a founding member of the Eagles, were living in San Diego at the time, and in an email interview described one component of the San Diego community which would have readily embraced the sounds of bluegrass, and he talked about his introduction to that music scene. A bunch of Okies and people from the South came during the Dust Bowl like the grapes of wrath, and some came during and after World War II. They came through on their way to the Pacific War, came home, and then moved out west. There was something like 200,000 active duty sailors and Marines in Southern California in the early 60s. Many came from the South and stayed. In the early 60s, there was a TV show from L.A., Cal's Corral, which we could see in San Diego. Joe and Rose Mathis were on that show and played around Southern California. And then there were all these folkies in the early 60s. That's how I got interested in banjo and guitar. I saw the Squirrel Barkers at a weekend hootenanny down at a local church hall near where I live. I think I was 15. Kenny's banjo ripped my head off. I went up to them after the show and found out that they had the blue guitar, which is a music store we'll talk about in a minute. And basically, I just started ditching school and going to the shop every day. Ed and Larry were at the shop every day making banjos, selling instruments, and hosting bluegrass, folk, and flamenco lessons. I shouldn't leave out Yuri Zeltons, the third partner in the blue guitar, who was a flamenco player. There was also folk or bluegrass music either being played. There was always folk or bluegrass music either being played or flamenco on the sound system. They had a little stage area, and on the weekends would have shows, so it was a great scene. And plenty of cute girls. Can't leave that out. In his description, Bernie references the Blue Guitar, which was a small music store and repair shop on Midway Drive in San Diego, and ground zero for the young acoustic music scene. In fact, the story actually begins a short time before the opening of the Blue Guitar. This is Yuris Zeltons. Yuris Zeltons, a well-known flamenco-style guitar player and luthier in San Diego. The story began at Frank Image Furniture Store, which had the distinction of importing and selling guitars from Mexico. According to Zeltons, for this reason, many of the local young guitarists and their fellow musicians hung out amid the furniture and gave and received lessons in Frank Image's home until his wife put a stop to the late-night sessions and students and teachers in her kitchen. Out of desperation at losing their unofficial headquarters or their clubhouse, Yuris Zeltons, Ed Douglas, and Larry Murphy, who we're going to talk about in a minute, opened the Blue Guitar. This is the site which was then in 1962, the Blue Guitar. Now it's a very small auto store, Midway Drive in San Diego. It was a small storefront with a partial dirt floor, where they sold and repaired guitars, sold equipment, gave lessons, and even had a small performance stage. Ed Douglas reported that they took all the merchandise home with them at night because of the lack of security in the store. So every night they'd pack all this up and bring it back with them the next day. This really was like a little vanity project, these kids. They lost their playhouse, so they went and rented, I think, $90 a month or something. They rented this place with a dirt floor, called it a music store, and they hung out. Over the next couple of years, the Blue Guitar, this was actually the third place. The second location they were in has been destroyed. Over the next couple of years, the Blue Guitar would inhabit three different buildings in the Midway Drive area. This is current Blue Guitar. Although it's not owned by any of the people in our story here, it continues to exist. And Yuris Zeltons, that we met a few minutes ago, still, while he was one time the part owner, he still repairs instruments and works there. And we found him. Bill suggested that we ride early one morning, that we just ride by the new store and take a picture of it. So we go and park out back. We're walking around front to take a picture. And in a folded chair, out sitting in the sun, working those Sudoku puzzles, whatever those things are, is none other than Yuris Zeltons. So Faith was with us, and we just walked up and introduced ourselves. And after a little bit of concern on his part, he opened up and talked to us and took us in the store. All right, that is the current Blue Guitar. It was at the first of these stores that Ed Douglas, Larry Murphy, Gary Carr, Chris Hillman, and Kenny Works began performing traditional bluegrass as a unit and took the name the Scottsville Squirrel Barkers. In addition to the bluegrass contingent, the store was the meeting place for many other musicians of various genres. Regulars at the store included Mason Williams, who I believe was in the Navy at the time, but was a regular there, who would later write and record hit songs, classical guests, and singer-songwriter Boyd Axton, and a female folk group called the Femme Modernes, which I wish we had included the picture of the young ladies that we saw while we were out there, a local all-female folk group. The initial seed for the band was planted when Kenny Works and Gary Carr met and began playing as a guitar and banjo folk duo and hanging out at the Blue Guitar. Ed and Larry joined in on Ed Douglas and Larry Murphy joined in on bass and dobro, and the Scottsville Squirrel Barkers were born. And this is that group, the four people. Well, I'll give you the names. Scottsville Squirrel Barkers were born with Chris Hillman, age 16, being added just a few months later. And this is that original group. They were fancy dressers, nothing else. Kenny Works on the banjo, Chris Hillman playing mandolin, Larry Murphy on dobro there in the middle, He had Douglas on bass and Gary Carr and the other funny hat on guitar. The name of the group, Scottsville Squirrel Archer, was provided by Ed Douglas, who had lived in Kentucky as a young man, who had roots in the community of Scottsville, Kentucky. He explained to the young Californians that squirrel barking was a technique used by hunters in Kentucky, whereby a high-powered rifle shot would be carefully placed beneath the squirrel in the tree bark so that the squirrel would be knocked from the tree and then could be captured without damage to the squirrel flesh and therefore were readily prepared in the evening. Anybody know that? Is that it? I found it on the internet, so that is actually...
We checked this one out.
Now, I wouldn't say it made sense, but not that I question you, but I question you. All right. The Squirrel Barkers quickly became the official house band at the Blue Guitar, and along with their regular appearances there, they began performing at other venues. This photo was taken at Disneyland at one of the shows they did there, with basically the same lineup. Although the group lasted only approximately 18 months, they performed at Disneyland in Anaheim, Balboa Park in San Diego, large bluegrass festival at the Ice House in Pasadena, numerous other venues in and around San Diego. As with any band worth their salt, the Squirrels needed, or at least wanted, a recording to help with self-promotion. According to Kitty Wirtz, when they felt that the music was tight, they loaded up, and this is a little harder to believe than the squirrel barking, but this is their story, and they're sticking with it. They loaded all five band members and an upright bass in a four-door Chevy Corvair and drove to Los Angeles. Absolutely swear that that's the case. They drove to Los Angeles, where they proceeded to call every recording company in the phone book from a payphone. Their optimism was rewarded when Crown Records agreed to listen to their audition tape and then agreed to record them the following week if they would return to L.A. Ed Douglas added that he was familiar with the situation at Crown Records and knew that they would record for it in return for the right to distribute and sell the LP, so it wasn't quite as haphazard as the other members had led us to believe. This was the album. The group entered the studio and within a period of 4 to 5 hours recorded 10 traditional songs, just over 18 minutes total, which were to become Crown CLP 5346 entitled Bluegrass Favorites by the Scottsville Squirrel Barkers, destined to be sold in grocery store and dime store bins around the country for less than a dollar. It is amazing how many copies of this thing still exist. They turn up on eBay, and I have probably six myself, and I know any number of people who have one. As per their usual policy, Crown required all the tunes be in the public domain so as to avoid the messy problem of royalties. Members all agreed that their only compensation was the number of copies of the LP to be sold at their public appearances. According to Chris Hill, when the records were pressed from inferior vinyl, and would quickly begin to disintegrate upon repeated playing. Several members of the group have expressed their belief that the recordings were later speeded up to achieve breakneck speeds heard on the LP. In fact, there's no question, if you listen to them, there's no way these guys were playing. They will tell you that they did not play those songs that fast. The LP was released in 1962 as Crown CLP 5346, stereo version CST 346, and the songs included Shady Grove, Home Sweet Home, Katie Klein, Swamp Root, The Willow Tree, Hand Me Down My Walking Cane, Three Finger Breakdown, which we heard, Cripple Creek, Crown Junction Breakdown, and Reuben's Train. Just a point of interest, sometime later, and I don't know when, that exact same recording was released as Crown CST 444 under the name The Best of Bluegrass Favorites by the Kentucky Mountain Boys. Who would decide to sell bluegrass, traditional bluegrass music without album covers? Anybody's guess, but I'm sure there was a marketing decision behind it. Although the music is strictly acoustic and traditional, the cover shot on this release obviously features a sexy brunette and an electric guitar. Obviously. And once again, amazing how easy this thing is to find. again, I have 6 or 8 copies that I bought off of eBay and other used record stores, probably The Great Escape. In fact, the first one I saw was at The Great Escape here in Nashville. Still later, apparently in an effort to capitalize on the Bonnie and Clyde fad, the same recording was again released. With one additional cut of the title tune, The Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde, by unknown musicians, this time as custom CS-1109 titled The Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde by Ray Waters, who was, by all reports, a fictional artist. To add to the mystique surrounding this particular release, I also have an exact duplicate of this album, the same cover shot, the same number, the same title, the same song list on the cover, but when you pull the LP out and look at the song list, it's listed as Ray Waters and his orchestra, and other than The Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde, the actual songs on the LP are things like China, Harvest Moon, and The Girls, Summertime, and The Lady. As other than the one song. The recording was released at least one additional time by Ariola Eurogift in the Netherlands and released as The Best of Bluegrass Favorites by the Kentucky Mountain Boys, featuring Chris Hillman in order to cash in on his later fame and fortune, and there may well be other releases as well. I suspect there are. In more recent years, the recordings have been released on CD by Big Beat Records in London, and it is readily available on Amazon.com. And at any time, there are multiple copies available again on eBay. The names of some of the band members of the Scottsdale School of Archers are easily recognizable. As a group, they spent less than 2 years together, made little impact outside San Diego, but as individuals, several of them have gone on to greater heights. In 1963, the group began to disintegrate when Kitty Wirtz and Gary Carr left to join the Air Force. For the remainder of the band gigs, they were replaced by banjoist Bernie Ledman and guitarist Doug Jeffords, who are till this day referred to as honorary squirrels by Chris and the other members. This was the beginning of the period that Ed Douglas refers to as the Exodus, during which all the band members left San Diego to seek their fortunes, musical and otherwise, and all in Los Angeles. This is Chris Hillman. Chris is probably the best known of the Squirrel Archers. Growing up on a family ranch in San Diego County, his introduction to folk and bluegrass music was a result of a guitar his mother bought for him in Tijuana, Mexico, and the collection of folk music LPs which belonged to his older sister. In an interview, he explained how he became an official Squirrel Archer. In 1962, I moved up to L.A. with my mom and sister after my dad passed away. I turned 18 and then returned to San Diego on my motorcycle with my Gibson mandolin strapped on my back and joined the Squirrel Barkers. As the Squirrel Barkers disbanded in 1963, Chris returned to L.A. where he joined the Golden State Boys, later dubbed the Hillman for marketing purposes, a bluegrass band which included Don Parmalee and the Gosden brothers, Vern and Rex. That's Rex Gosden on the far right there. He was soon lured away from this job by producer Jim Dixon, who was producing the rock group that was to become the Byrds. Next, he joined Graham Parsons to form the Flying Burrito Brothers, and from there with Stephen Stills and Manassas. Several configurations later, he, along with Herb Peterson, John Jorgensen, Bill Bryson, J.D. Manus, and Steve Duncan, formed the Desert Rose Band, and a highly acclaimed West Coast country group known for their vocal work and instrumental ability. Chris has settled in Ventura, California, but continues to tour and record. In addition to an occasional solo project, he regularly records and tours with his longtime friend Herb Peterson as an acoustic duet doing bluegrass tunes, Bakersfield-style country music, as well as, in more recent years, acoustic renditions of Byrds and Burrito Brothers material. This is Kitty Wirtz. Kitty Wirtz found himself in San Diego as a small boy when his father's Navy career caused the family to relocate from Maryland. He began exploring folk music and eventually gravitated to the banjo as his main instrument after being given a Flatten Scruggs LP by a young banjo player who he met on a city bus, but who preferred to play from the style of banjo to the three-finger Scruggs style. Having already met Gary Carr and formed a folk duo, The music led them both to Frank's Furniture and then to the Blue Guitar, where they were introduced to the other members of the school orchestra. In 1963, Kitty left the band to join the Air Force, and upon his discharge, moved to L.A. and was promptly recruited for the original lineup of the Country Gazette, which is a progressive and innovative bluegrass ensemble, initially led by Oklahoma native fiddler Bobby Burbine. While still active in that group, he was drafted by friend Chris Hillman to replace Bernie Levin in the Flying Burrito Brothers. After fulfilling the band, the Burrito Brothers' obligations for a European tour, that group, Flying Burrito Brothers, disbanded, and Kitty rejoined the Country Gazette for another 5 years and several LPs before laying aside his musical career in favor of family and career. He currently resides in Fallbrook, California, where he plays bluegrass as an avocation and works in the medical equipment design field. And here we have Larry Murphy. Larry was the talker for the group. They will all tell you, Larry was a funny guy. He did all the talking. Didn't do much dobro, but he did a lot of talking. Larry Murphy played dobro in the group, settled in San Diego after serving his own stint in the military. He was one of the original partners in the Blue Guitar and was one of the older members of the group. After his time with the School of Barkers, he also moved to Los Angeles, where he did MC work at the famous Troubadour Club and founded an influential acoustic group named Hearts and Flowers, which recorded two LPs. I don't think Hearts and Flowers made it to Newman, Georgia when I was a teenager, but apparently they were rather influential on the West Coast. Their two albums have been re-released on LP in the last couple of years. Richie Underberger, who has written extensively on country rock, described the group as one of the most eclectic 1960s folk rock groups, as well as being one of the very first to point the way towards country rock. A later member of Hearts and Flowers was none other than Bernie Levin, who seemed to regularly surface anywhere there was new and original music being made. Back to Larry Murphy, he has worked as a writer in more recent years with various television show personalities, including the Smothers Brothers, Glenn Campbell, Johnny Cash. He's currently living in Sherman Oaks, California, where he continues to write songs and make music. He occasionally returns to San Diego to perform with the Squirrel Barker, the bass player, Ed Douglas, in a group they have called High, Wide, and Handsome. How lonesome, but High, Wide, and Handsome. Moving to Bernie Levin. Bernie was an honorary member of the Squirrels, according to Chris Hillman, because he filled the banjo seat for the remainder of the gigs after Kenny Works left the service. Bernie had been a friend of the band for its entire duration and was inspired to pick after hearing Kenny Works. After the Squirrel Barker, Bernie played with Linda Ronstadt, with Hearts and Flowers, with the Dillard and Clark Expedition, the Flying Burrito Brothers, and ultimately was a founding member of the Eagles just a few years later. Currently lives in Nashville, I believe, and stays busy with all sorts of numerous musical projects. Ed Douglas, now age 77, these were young guys when they started this, now age 77 was the bassist, the oldest member, and the leader of the group when one was needed. An ex-police officer, Ed continued to operate the Blue Guitar for a period before moving to L.A. after the breakup of the band. He moved to L.A. where he managed and promoted an early country rock style group, Stone Country. Ed currently lives in San Diego, where he owns the Double Eagle Store, which is a combination of music store and leather shop. In 2003, he, along with a local newspaper, music-oriented newspaper, the San Diego Troubadour, arranged for the Scottsville Squirrel Barkers to have their first and only reunion at the Adams Avenue Roots Festival in San Diego. And all of the surviving members, including Bernie Levin and Chris Hillman, turned up to do this two-show reunion in San Diego. Ed Douglas continues to make music under the name High, Wide, and Handsome with a group of friends, often including several of the ex-Squirrels. Gary Carr is a guy about whom very little is known. He was a guitar player with the group and was a native of San Diego. Left the group to join the Air Force. After his discharge, he moved around the country to various cities making music in different configurations. His only known recording was with Jeff Stelling, the banjo builder, in a group called Hard Times in the San Francisco Bay Area. Unfortunately, while still a young man, Gary passed away. This is Doug Jeffords, who was a career naval officer stationed in San Diego when he disengaged with the Squirrel Barkers after Gary Carr left to join the military. Doug finished his career as a self-described boat driver in the Navy and retired to Santa Fe, New Mexico, but also returned to San Diego on occasion to perform with Ed in High, Wide, and Handsome. This is the story of the Scotsman of Squirrel Barkers. It could have ended as thousands of others such bands do, with the members drifting apart one by one, moving into non-musical endeavors. Instead, the Exodus took five of the seven to Los Angeles, where they contributed various levels to the popular music of the 60s and 70s that was to be labeled country rock. The list of bands includes the Byrds, the Flying Burrito Brothers, the Eagles, Hearts and Flowers, Linda Ronstadt, Stone Ponies, Manassas, and Stone Countries. Two of those five, Hillman and Ledden, have enjoyed long and varied careers and played major roles in the development of country rock. In my opinion, my personal opinion, the most amazing aspect of the Squirrel Barkers is that today, 45 years later, the six surviving band members remain in contact with each other and are subject to gather in various configurations to play music. It's amazing also that Crown CLP 5346, Bluegrass Favorites, is available in CD. This is a picture of the jam session that took place when Bill and I went out. They were having this Roots Festival, Adams Avenue Roots Festival, and so we just went out to join us right there. We are leaning in the window up there, watching the music being played. And what a group of guys they gathered. And here's one of the shows that High, Wide, and Handsome was doing in the beer garden when we were there. And several of these, actually, only one of the guys, just the guitar player on the left, Ed Douglas, is the only Squirrel Barker that you can see in that picture. And with that, one more picture of the Squirrel Barkers made in Balboa Park at their peak. And that's the story, my friends, of the Scottsdale Squirrel Barkers. We have one more team this season. See you there. He had a condo right outside the back gate at Disneyland, and he was touring with Desert Rose Band. He wasn't quite willing to give up his Disneyland work, and every morning, I spent a couple of nights with him, and every morning he'd get up and shower, head in the back gate. I think in the mornings he did like two bluegrass shows, and in the afternoon he did two Dixieland shows, and then he might be off to Palomino to play something else that night, so the list would be long.
Travis?
About, of course, they were, what is it, from San Diego to L.A., 3 hours drive, something like that. I don't think there was a lot of interaction, but this festival at the Troubadour was the only thing they mentioned where they all got together. I think the Rice Brothers, the Country Boys, the Rice Brothers were there. The Dillards were there, I believe. And so they were aware of each other, but there wasn't a lot of interaction until what Ed Douglas calls the Exodus, and they all moved to L.A. and mixed it up.
Just an observation, Pro Tools didn't exist then, and that
although that may have been slightly sped up. That was a typical tempo for 1962. Lots of bluegrass in that era was recorded in much faster times than it is done before today.
And it may be that these guys have just gotten old and can't believe that they ever played that. But I can tell you that they listen to that and they say, there's no way we played that stuff that day. Listen to the vocals, you can't tell that it's, you know, the pitch is raised, but that's their suspicion anyway.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Anybody who's got a copy of this, we have copies here.